Southern California Chinese American Oral History Project, jointly sponsored by the UCLA Asian American Studies Center and the Chinese Historical Society of Southern California. This is an interview of Bessie Liu, done by Emma Louie, as part of the general meeting of the Chinese Historical Society of Southern California, May 6, 1981. This interview, to be known as 38C, or Tape 5, Bessie Liu.
Mr. Chairman, and dear Emma, you know, when she came up to ask me, or before anything else, I want this to be a fireside chat. How's that with you? I want you to be we as one big family, okay? All right. Well, anyway, when she came up to me, she said, Bessie, do you mind? I told you your age. I said, no, no, not at all. You know, there were times in my life, I can hardly wait until I become 18 so I could be an elder. So after 18, there was a plateau that I didn't want anybody to know my age. And then after a certain plateau, now I am so proud to be what I am now. I don't think any of you could beat me in this room, because all you are. All you are just a face in the wood. But anyway, Emma has told you how I began my life. Now, you said you were going to ask me some questions. Uh-huh. All right. You want to start asking, or you want me to tell you about myself?
Well, let me ask you one question first, and then I'll have you tell about yourself.
All
okay.
Right.
There's one burning question I have. Not really. Would you be seated? I wanted to ask you about your baby carriage that's in the ladies' room at the Imperial Dynasty restaurant. I don't know how many of you have ever had a gourmet treat in Hanford, where Bessie was born, in the Imperial Dynasty restaurant. Richard Wing, who is an internationally renowned chef and also the proprietor of the restaurant, likes to take people on guided tours of the premises. So one of the first places that he takes everybody to is the ladies' room. And he ushers everybody, men and women, into this room. And then he shows us, this is Bessie Liu's baby carriage. Now, why is your baby carriage in the ladies' room?
I guess they really wanted to decorate it. I tell you, this is the most, it's very funny. How it came to my attention was when Guy Lee and Beulah and quite a number of them, they were doing me a great favor by giving me this surprise testimonial dinner. And mind you, 2 months before the dinner, I was invited by a friend of ours, you know, for this particular date. And I said, what for? Why should I go there? What do you want me to go there for? It's 2 months away. He said, well, I want you to meet someone from Hong Kong, Bob Lee. All right. So when I said, all right. So at the time when I went down to this party, they got it so completely well planned that when I went into Mam Jin Lo, the girl, the hostess by the door, thumbed over the pages and said, oh yes, Mr. Miller, that's right, you've got a reservation upstairs, but I'm terribly sorry. It's all taken upstairs. Do you mind going to the back room? And when I went to the back room, what happened? Lo and behold, there was Beulah, Guy, and all my friends there, 200 strong. But anyway, when I went there, they did such minute detail in getting into my files. When I went on my vacation, Guy Lee, I don't know who else he took to my apartment, thumb over my file and pull out pictures from my file, you know. So when this party was there, they had a screen there. There was my baby cat, my perimeter leader, plus the fact, the things that I did at home. I was in the orchestra, played the flute, and all these little intimate pictures they got there and drew it on the screen. But anyway, I don't want to depart. I told Emma that she must stop me when I get, you know, go on and on. But anyway, that's how I think this, I think after that, Richard Wing, the owner of the Imperial Dynasty in Hanford, where I was born, I think he thought it over. My goodness, they came, send a bus down here to take this baby carriage up there, so this thing must be important. That's why now he has it in the ladies' lounge. So when you go there, you tell them you're a friend of Bessie. And that is the only time you get to go to the ladies' lounge in that restaurant. But anyway, you want me to continue?
Yes,
on.
I'd like you to. I like you to tell us a little bit about your background, your parents, and how they got to Hanford. And
my father, I was told, you know, as old as all Chinese families, you know, since I was born in 1902, you know, in those days, our upbringing, girls should be beautifully seen but not heard, you know. So therefore, I wasn't even put to school until I was 10 years old, American school, I mean, because there was no compulsory law that we must go to school. Nowadays, if you're 5 or 6, you have to go to school, isn't that?
Mm-hmm.
All right, in my days, it didn't. So when I first, my father came over when he was 16 and he built this building, which still stands. That is where the Imperial Dynasty is, part of this building. They bought 3 buildings side by side. And the one that my father built was built in 1886. And right next to my father's building, the place that I was born, it is a Chinese temple. I know some of you have been to Hanford and saw this temple. And I was told that the state has funded them, gave them a grant to restore this temple, which stands in Hanford. And of course, there are very few. There's one in Marysville, mm-hmm. and
right.
somewhere
That's
else.
Right.
But I'm very proud that Hanford mm-hmm. is going to restore this. So when you go there, you must be sure and see it, because it's one of the landmarks. So anyway, I was sent to school, not until when I was 10 years old, went to grammar school. And when I went to grammar school, they had never seen a Chinese girl before, and I tell you, what I went through, you don't know how wonderful you people, how times have changed. When I went to school, they all surrounded me because I was the only Chinese girl and so different from they. And then on Saturdays, my mother would put these cute little Chinese pajamas on me, and when I went downtown and all the Caucasian people having seen a Chinese before wearing Chinese costume would look at me. So all through my life I have gone through such prejudice or maybe because of ignorance, I don't know. And I remember at the time when we went on Saturdays, we went to matinees, you know, and we could not sit in the center. With the Mexicans, all the ethnic groups, we can only sit on the side of the theater. And not until when there was rows, Dolores, you remember, Honorable Wu's, his partner came to Hanford, and they are show people. So when they heard about this, they went to the theater, they raised Cain, and they went there and fought with the manager. And since then, we were able to sit in the center of the theater. So you see, there's a great big, there's a lot of changes because of ignorance, not knowing one race to the other, you know. So it's through understanding that we eliminate the prejudices. And I think I'm rambling on this. I said before, this is just a fireside chat with them. And then after school, then I decided I would like to go to college. And of course, she told you where I went. And after that, then I fell in love and got married, and Richard was going to UCLA then, and I was at the teacher's college. So after we were married, we came down here, and he was at the manager of the Han Company. Then they were calling for General Died at Dawn. They wanted Chinese to work in it. So at that time, Tommy Gubbin was a runner. So he hired the Chinese people. We thought it would be fun to go. And so we all went there. We were selected. So when they saw my husband, tall and all, they gave him, they appointed him, you know, to ask him to do a part instead of being an extra. Now, so gradually, as we went along, they begin to have a little bit more important roles. So in 1936, we were, all the Chinese people that were interested were interviewed for The Good Earth, and I happened to be one of the lucky four that, you know, was contracted to MGM. I was there from the very first day to the last day. And in the meantime, right after Good Earth, 1937, 1939, was when the Screen Actors Guild came into being. Prior to that, there was a runner. And some of you might know, I think Dorothy Sue would know, there was a man there that was a runner. By that I mean he hires all the Chinese people to work in the pictures. In those days, there was the Good Earth, the Dragon Seed, and General Died at Dawn, and quite a number of them. Now, what he did was, he hired the Chinese people as extra. He got paid from the studio, he was hired by the studio, and he got a kickback from all of us. We were paid only $5, but each $5 we had to give him $1. So he was making money both ways. So when the Screen Actors Guild found out, you know, that there was such a thing, then they decided to, well, we've got to do something about it and really have a Chinese that's impartial, you know, that would be honest. So then when they went through the roster of the Chinese players, they came to me and I said, no, I cannot. Then finally they got hold of Billy, Louis, Dorothy, you're here, they're still here, aren't they? I haven't seen them for a long time. Billy Louis, her sister, it was Billy Louis herself. They got her there as a casting director in Central Casting. But after 1 month's time, two months, they had to let her go because she does not speak Chinese. And what good would it be if all these Chinese extras couldn't speak English, you see? So finally they came to me again. They called me three different times before I accepted. So I feel that my life is really God made up with fate, you know. And I said, all right. I said, I couldn't come up to Central Casting to work because I had my baby. But my husband said at that time, you go ahead and I will take care of them. because they said, you'll come up to Central. After I said, yes, I think I will try it, I was asked to go to Central Casting and be trained for 2 weeks. And the reason is because I can speak Chinese. Now, in the meantime, the Chinese actors form a Chinese cinema players. This I have never told anyone because there wasn't any occasion to. Since you are the Chinese Historical Society, I feel that you should know something about it. So just a couple of nights ago, I started to think about it. And then I said, my goodness, you know, the things that we did, we organized this Chinese cinema players on top of the Chinese village. Do you know where the Chinese village is or what? At that time, Dorothy does. It's on Ord and Alameda. That is where Bruce Lee and Bruce Wong and Bill Wong was. He owned that Chinese restaurant. And we rented the top floor from him and organized a Chinese cinema players. We installed a phone there. We had newspapers there. We even have a mahjong set if some of them wanted to go out there to play. And this is where we thought we would volunteer to help all the Chinese people that were Screen Actors Guild, because they couldn't speak English, Central Casting couldn't speak Chinese to them. That's why they had to have me there, because then in that way I could speak Chinese to them. But coming back to the Chinese cinema players, Spencer Chan was a wonderful man. As a matter of fact, I phoned him this morning so that he could review the things that I had forgotten, you know. And he, Richard Liu, and myself, I think are the very few people remaining. Bless their souls, the others all have gone. And I tell you what we did. Besides helping, placing them, giving them the call, explain it to them in Chinese so that they could go to work. All right, during the war years, when the Japanese invaded the China, that was before Pearl Harbor, we asked Tommy Gubbin, who had a warehouse on Los Angeles Street, if he would give us their warehouse. We started to organize to collect old clothes, canned goods, and we even had little boxes to take it to all the Chinese laundry. We distributed these boxes so they could put money into these boxes, and then we have certain ones volunteer in this Chinese cinema players to collect the money. We did so much, and people from various churches, American churches, all over, brought old clothes to us, some donated canned goods, and we shipped these to China to help the relief when the Japanese were there. All right, I must give credit to Jihan Wong. I don't know whether any of you know Jihan Wong or not. He was the manager of this particular project that we did, and then we have different volunteers. Spencer was there all the time. We have different people from 8 to 12 o'clock or 8 to 2. Myself, I sign up for 8 to from 9 to 2 because my daughters were at school. So when I had to go back to pick my daughter, then Richard came. So we took turns in volunteer work to get these things to send it back to China. And did you know we have accumulated over $2,000, and we sent it to Madame Chiang Kai-shek. We got a glowing letter from her in Chinese, you know. And that time, Daisy Lee, I don't know whether any of you know Daisy Lee. Daisy Lee's daughter is Eleanor Yi, that works for Jane Chung's husband. But anyway, It was her mother that was the secretary to the cinema players. We got all these things together, but somehow something happened to her home. Either was stolen or forgot on fire, so all that was destroyed. Isn't that a pity? Here we have a wonderful letter in Chinese to acknowledge what we Chinese, the Chinese cinema players, have done to help China as a relief, you know, thing for them. Well, we were doing so well, and this is very unfortunate. One particular organization, which is nameless, I shall not mention, started to feel that we cinema players were just doing too much. They wanted to come and say, well, we like to take over. We'll do it, you know. And there were quite a bit of friction. Or I mustn't forget this. All the Chinese restaurants, they were wonderful to us. All these volunteers down at this warehouse, Su Chao, Gerald, your father's restaurant, they all came forth and provided lunch for us every day for the volunteers. And but anyway, we were kind of sad. We told them that, well, if you want to take it over, because whatever we did, we got permission from the social welfare, social service. They gave us a permit to do what we did. But they feel that, well, we Chinatown people, if you want me to tell you who they are, I don't care. I'm going to say Junhua. Make us take everything back to them. And what happened? They didn't have the manpower. Nobody went there to collect after a month. Nobody volunteered to collect the money. Nobody donated any old clothes or anything. So the thing just flopped, you know. Wasn't that sad? That's why I feel whatever we do, we will all cooperate, you know. And I think, because what we have done, you know, we feel quite proud of the Chinese actors and actresses. Because at that time, a lot of the Chinese people were not educated enough to accept us, you know. Even our mothers, my mother at one time when I went to San Francisco was in a show with Ju Fong from Seattle. When I went home, I didn't hear the last of it because they didn't believe it, you know. But anyway, that is part of what we did, you know. Not only that, there was a time that when all of the cinema players picketed, we went down to Wilmington and picketed this ship that was sending scrap iron to Japan, you know. And we were told not to patronize Standard Oil because they were sending oil to Japan. Well, I tell you, up to now, I have never patronized, you know, Standard Oil. Isn't that terrible?
May I just ask you something? Do you want to sit down?
Okay.
Let's see, how many people were there in the cinema players? How many actors and actresses were there among the Chinese or at that time? You're talking about in the 1939 or 40.
About 40. Because I tell you, Dorothy, you were one of them. Her brother-in-law, William Yip, was a wonderful helper to volunteer. Your sister, Anne Yip, you know, and Dorothy was there too. And we all really pitched in and did our bit to, you know, help. Among ourselves, too, in our work, you know. And of course, now you want to know something about when we went to work at the studio. Well, we were treated quite well, but of course, there were no important parts given to the Chinese, because the Chinese are passive. They do not have any emotion. And many a time I have gotten to hard, I mean, got into arguments with them. I said, if you give us a part, we'll show you we can remote. And now it has been proven, you have a member here, like you look bold, you know, that has done so many wonderful things.
Now, when did you start being an agent then? You were a casting director for a while. How did it come about that you became an agent?
Well, as I said before, you know, when Central Casting came into being, when they did away with Tom Gubbins, he is Eurasian. His father was English and his mother was Chinese, so he spoke very good Chinese. I think he spoke better Cantonese than I did. And they did away with him, so when that's how they got me up there, uh-huh. Central Casting. And not only was I a caster, I was trained there for 2 weeks after that, and I could do whatever I wanted at home. Oh, how I got into accepting was, they said, well, Bessie, if we install phones in your house, will you please do it because you're the only qualified person, you know? And so after 3 times, I said yes. That's how I started working at home. The phones were put in my, you know, home.
Mm-hmm. And when did you become an agent then?
Oh, yes. And then that was during the war years, you know. And, there were hundreds of Japanese people needed, you know. So sometimes I work from 5 o'clock in the morning until midnight. Why? 5 o'clock, some of the Chinese people would be calling me. And let me tell you something, some of those that had been by Bakafiu and they lost money, they feel that they better get some money from Bessie. So they would call me 5 or 6 o'clock and ask if they couldn't get a job. And of course in those days, our call would be 6 o'clock in the morning or 6:30. And then I had to go out to the studio besides casting at night. The next morning, I have only about 4 hours sleep. I have to go to the casting. Why? Because the Chinese people, we don't know whether it's Wong Fang or Fang Wong. They don't know which is the last name. So I have to go out there to you know, they have the vouchers all in alphabetically order. All right, Chinese man would go up there and say, my name is Wong Xin. Maybe his last name is Xin. And I have to tell them, you know, I have to get the voucher and give it to them. And then, after that, then also when they're working in the, I'm talking about the atmosphere people, you know, the SEG, Screen Extra Guild. Then they found that they couldn't make them understand, so they got me, I was holding at that time 3 jobs. Besides casting director, in the morning, I have to go to the studio, that was at Fox Studio, we were doing Keys of the Kingdom, another picture with Humphrey Bogart, I don't remember. I had to go there to give them the vouchers, plus the fact, be an interpreter there and be a herder. I was just like this all the time. Maybe go go hang la, go hang gum fire, go 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 she made it handy, go she mine. This is what I had to do all the time, you know. And it was fun. And at that time, Keys of the Kingdom, Howard Koch, who became one of the finest producer, who was the head of the Paramount Studio, he was a second assistant, and I was his assistant. So many times when he sees me now, we kid each other, you know. Remember, he was a second assistant, and here I was, you know, his assistant because I was the interpreter.
I see.
You see that?
So that was after that you became an agent instead of a casting director?
Yes.
Okay.
I have to be reminded. You see, it's so many years ago because most of these happened when you weren't born yet, you see. And anyway, when it was casting for the extra people, then the student would say, Bessie, we want a Japanese soldier that can speak a line or two. I said, oh? He said, yeah, please send us one. So I would send someone there to do a bit part. And another one, oh, do you know the different unions? The maybe I should really digress and tell you. There's the union, SEG, Screen Extra Guild. They are the ones that work in the background without saying anything. At first, that's what the casting director, at that time when I was doing, I was working for Central Casting. Then when they started to ask me to send people up there that speak a line, then they have to belong to another union. And all the stars and the top people belong to that, the Screen Actors Guild. That's where our dear Beulah Crowe is one of the members of Screen Actors Guild. Then there are two other unions, maybe three. There's the Equity, that is for like Playhouse, you know, dramas and things, you know. And there's AGVA, which is American Variety Artists. That is like for Las Vegas singing and all that. Did I mention Equity? I did. But anyway, there are about four or five of them. And therefore, I was doing all this free service and getting nothing in return. So somebody suggested, well, why don't you become an agent? I said, well, how can I? They said, well, you be a sub-agent and join in. So I joined in with Crosby at first, Bing Crosby's brother, the Crosby Agency. And at that time, Kristen Hofeld was the assistant, was an assistant to Crosby. So when he opened his office, he took me along with him. So I was doing two.